Welcome to the Choose You Netcast. This is Jim Langlois with a word from Joshua 24:15. Choose you this day whom you will serve, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. It's my prayer that this netcast will encourage and cheer you on as we join forces to draw the line in the sand, defending our faith and our households in the resurrection power of Jesus. Join me each weekday as we dig deeply into God's amazing word and bring up the rich treasures of his blessings. Are you ready?
Choose you this day whom you will serve, but that's for me and my house, me and my house, me and my house. I said choose you this day whom you will serve, but that's for me and my house, me and my house, me and my house.
Good morning, NetWorld, and thank you for tuning in. We're continuing with our series called The Gospel of Christ. And our text scripture is Matthew chapter 24, verse 14, which says, "And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come." Now, yesterday we started to read the book of Isaiah chapter 53, verses 1 through 12 in the Amplified Version. We only got a few verses in, so let me start at the beginning again. Here we go, Isaiah 53, 1 through 12 in the Amplified Version. This is such a prophetic description of the death of Jesus on the cross. It says, "Who has believed, trusted in, relied upon, and clung to our message of that which was revealed to us, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been disclosed? For the servant of God grew up before him like a tender plant, and like a root out of dry ground. He has no form of comeliness, royal kingly pomp, that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected and forsaken by men, a man of sorrows and pains, and acquainted with grief and sickness, and like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised, and we did not appreciate his worth or have any esteem for him. Surely he has borne our griefs, sicknesses, weaknesses, and distresses, and carried our sorrows and pains of punishment, yet we ignorantly considered him stricken, smitten, and afflicted by God as if with leprosy. But he was wounded for our transgressions, he was bruised for our guilt and iniquities, the chastisement needful to obtain peace and well-being for us was upon him, and with the stripes that wounded him, we are healed and made whole. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has made to light upon him the guilty and iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, yet when he was afflicted, he was submissive and opened not his mouth, like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And as for his generation, who among them considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living, stricken to his death for the transgression of my, Isaiah's people, to whom the stroke was due? And they assigned him a grave with the wicked, and with the rich man in his death, although he had done no violence, neither was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the will of the Lord to bruise him. He has put him to grief and made him sick. When you and he make his life an offering for sin, and he has risen from the dead, in time to come he shall see his spiritual offspring. He shall prolong his days, and the will and pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. He shall see the fruit of the travail of his soul and be satisfied. By his knowledge of himself, which he possesses and imparts to others, shall my uncompromisingly righteous one, my servant, justify many, and make many righteous, upright, and in right standing with God, and he shall bear their iniquities and the guilt with the consequences, says the Lord. Therefore I will divide him a portion with the great kings and rulers, and he shall divide the spoil with the mighty, because he poured out of his life unto death, and he let himself be regarded as a criminal and be numbered with the transgressors, yet he bore and took away the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors, the rebellious. Well, who has believed, trusted in, relied upon, and clung to our message? Well, what's the message? It's the gospel of Christ, the gospel of the kingdom. He came to seek and to save that which was lost. And that's out of Luke 19:10. Did he not do it? Should we not share it? The good news, as prophesied in Isaiah? Listen to this list. He was despised and rejected and forsaken by men. He has borne our griefs, sicknesses, weaknesses, and distresses. He carried our sorrows and pains of punishment. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our guilt and iniquities. The chastisement needful to obtain peace and well-being for us was upon him. With the stripes that wounded him, we are healed and made whole. The Lord has made to light upon him the guilty and iniquity of us all. He was oppressed. He was afflicted. He was submissive, like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and by oppression and judgment he was taken away. He was cut off out of the land of the living, stricken to his death for the transgression of my Isaiah's people. They assigned him a grave with the wicked. He had done no violence, neither was any deceit in his mouth. It was the will of the Lord to bruise him. He has put him to grief and made him sick. He has risen from the dead. He shall see his spiritual offspring. He shall see the fruit of the travail of his soul and be satisfied. He will justify many and make many righteous, being upright and in right standing with God. He shall bear their iniquities and guilt with the consequences. He shall divide the spoil with the mighty. He poured out his life unto death. He let himself be regarded as a criminal and be numbered with the transgressors. He bore and took away the sin of many. He made intercession for the transgressors. And who are they? The rebellious. Concerning the death of Christ, Philippians 2:8 says, "And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross." One of the best descriptions I have read of the death of Christ is written by Rick Renner in his book called Sparkling Gems from the Greek. And this is his story. Crucifixion was indisputably one of the cruelest and most barbaric forms of punishment in the ancient world. Flavius Josephus, the Jewish historian, described crucifixion as the most wretched of deaths. It was viewed with such horror that in one of Seneca's letters to Lucilius, Seneca wrote that suicide was preferable to crucifixion. Different parts of the world had different kinds of crucifixion. For example, in the East, the victim was beheaded and then hung in public display. Among the Jews, the victim was first stoned to death and then hung on a tree. Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 22 and 23 commanded, "And if a man have committed a sin worthy of death, and he be to be put to death, and thou hang him on a tree, his body shall not remain all night upon a tree, but thou shalt in any wise bury him that day, for he that is hanged is accursed of God." But at the time Jesus was crucified, the grueling act of crucifixion was entirely in the hands of the Roman authorities. This punishment was reserved for the most serious offenders, usually for those who had committed some kind of treason or who had participated in or sponsored state terrorism. Because Israel hated the occupying Roman troops, insurrections frequently arose among the populace. As a deterrent to stop people from participating in revolts, crucifixion was regularly practiced in Jerusalem. By publicly crucifying those who attempted to overthrow the government, the Romans sent a strong signal of fear to those who might be tempted to follow in their steps. Once the offender reached the place where the crucifixion was to occur, he was laid on the crossbeam he carried with his arms outstretched. Then a soldier would drive a 5-inch iron nail through each of his wrists into the crossbeam. After being nailed to the crossbeam, the victim was hoisted up by a rope, and the crossbeam was dropped into the notch on top of the upright post. When the crossbeam dropped into the groove, the victim suffered excruciating pain as his hands and wrists were wrenched by the sudden jerking motion. Then the weight of the victim's body caused his arms to be pulled out of their sockets. Josephus writes that the Roman soldiers, out of rage and hatred, amused themselves by nailing their prisoners in different postures. Crucifixion was truly a vicious ordeal. When the victim was nailed to his cross, the nails were not driven through the palms of his hands, but through his wrists. Once the wrists were secured in place, the feet came next. First, the victim's legs would be positioned so that the feet were pointed down with the soles pressed against the post on which the victim was suspended. A long nail would then be driven between the bones of the feet, lodged firmly enough between those bones to prevent it from tearing through the feet as the victim arched upward, gasping for breath. In order for the victim to breathe, he had to push himself up by his feet, which were nailed to the vertical beam. However, because the pressure on his feet became unbearable, it wasn't possible for him to remain long in this position, so eventually he would collapse back to the hanging position. As the victim pushed up and collapsed back down again and again over a long period of time, his shoulders eventually dislocated and popped out of joint. Soon, the out-of-joint shoulders were followed by the elbows and wrists. The various dislocations caused the arms to be extended up to 9 inches longer than usual, resulting in terrible cramps in the victim's arm muscles and making it impossible for him to push himself upward any longer to breathe. When he was finally too exhausted and could no longer push himself upward on the nail lodged in his feet, the process of asphyxiation began. Jesus experienced all of this torture. When he dropped down with the full weight of his body on the nails that were driven through his wrists, it sent excruciating pain up his arms, registering horrific pain in his brain. Added to this torture was the agony caused by the constant grating of Jesus' recently scourged back against the upright post every time he pushed up to breathe and then collapsed back to a hanging position. Due to extreme loss of blood and hyperventilation, the victim would then begin to experience severe dehydration. We can see this process in Jesus' own crucifixion when he cried out, "I thirst." After several hours of this torment, the victim's heart would begin to fail. Next, his lungs would collapse, and excess fluids would begin filling the lining of his heart and lungs, adding to the slow process of asphyxiation. When the Roman soldier came to determine whether or not Jesus was alive or dead, he thrust his spear into Jesus' side. One expert pointed out that if Jesus had been alive when the soldier did this, the soldier would have heard a loud sucking sound caused by the air being inhaled past the freshly made wound in the chest. But the Bible tells us that water and blood mixed together came pouring forth from the wound the spear had made, evidence that Jesus' heart and lungs had shut down and were filled with fluid. This was enough to assure the soldier that Jesus was already dead. It was customary for Roman soldiers to break the leg bones of a person being crucified, making it impossible for the victim to push himself upward to breathe and thus causing him to asphyxiate at a much quicker rate. However, because of the blood and water that gushed from Jesus' side, he was already considered dead. Since there was no reason for the soldiers to hasten Jesus' death, his legs were never broken. It's time to go. We'll continue with this tomorrow. Be blessed. You have been listening to the Choose You Netcast with Jim Langlois. If you have enjoyed this program, you can find out more about Jim Langlois Ministries on the Master's House website at tmhnow.org. That's tmhnow.org. On the media tab, you can listen to many more messages, subscribe to my daily devotional emails, and follow the link to my blog site. If you'd like to write me or become a financial partner with this ministry, my address is The Master's House, Post Office Box 1568, Mechanicsville, Virginia, 23116. That's The Master's House, Post Office Box 1568, Mechanicsville, Virginia, 23116. Online donations can also be made at tmhnow.org, and my email address is pastorjim@tmhnow.org. This is Jim Langlois saying be blessed, you and your whole household. Until next time.
Choose you this day, but that's for me and my house, me and my house, me and my house.